Welcome back to Psychedelic Therapy Frontiers, the podcast devoted to exploring the frontiers of psychedelic medicine and what it takes to cultivate a healthy mind, body, and spirit. As always, Psychedelic Therapy Frontiers is brought to you by Numinous. I'm Dr. Steve Thayer, and today my co-host Reid Robison and I discuss boundaries. We explore the importance and challenges of setting healthy boundaries, different categories of boundary setting, clarifying personal values, protecting your time and your energy, what leads to unhealthy boundaries, good professional boundaries for helping professionals, and much, much more. A few announcements for you. If you're looking for professional training pursuant to becoming a psychedelic assisted practitioner, you can check out the courses we offer here at Numinous. Click on the link in the show notes or go directly to numinous.com/training and use the code PTF10 for 10% off selected trainings. If you've listened to the show for a while, you've heard Reid and I talk a lot about the psychedelic clinical trial work that we do here at Numinous. If you or someone you know is interested in being a participant in a psychedelic clinical trial, you can click on the link in the show notes or go directly to numinous.com/research to learn more about the trials we're currently running. If you'd like to support our show, you can do so by leaving a rating or review in places like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can also share the episode with somebody you think might benefit from it. Without further ado, here is our conversation today about boundaries. All right, Reid, today we're going to talk about boundaries. It's a topic that we often discuss with our clients, a topic that is often discussed in, sort of trendy self-help online content. But what the heck are boundaries? Like, It's one of those words that gets used so often, sometimes it loses its meaning. But when we're talking about boundaries, what are we even talking about?
Yeah, that's a good question. So one, I'll respond to your question with another question.
How dare you?
How would it be if we were in a world without boundaries or borders?
I'm thinking of like geographical boundaries and borders, thinking like personal boundaries and borders.
No walls in between countries.
It makes me feel scared, I'll be honest. I feel like my boundaries are, they protect me in some ways.
Yeah, and if you think about parenting that we just talked about, right? Boundaries really do help a kid feel safe and flourish.
Right.
And we can get into that. But while that idea of a world without any borders, like there's even a nonprofit called Doctors Without Borders. Médecins Sans Frontières is like, it's a French nonprofit, but that is a worthy ideal. But like you said, if you get into the specifics, that would be, especially in the world we live in, kind of nuts.
Yeah. From a mental health perspective, I like to think of both interpersonal and intrapersonal boundaries. So the interpersonal boundaries being sort of the limits, the guidelines, the yeses and nos on how you spend your time, spend your energy, how you let people in or don't let them in. And then the intrapersonal boundaries, the ones you have with yourself, right?
Yeah.
Boundaries around how I talk to myself, boundaries around how I behave, you know, when I'm in solitude, boundaries around what you eat or how you sleep, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, the topic of boundaries and the work we do is interesting as well. Like, especially as a new therapist, I just think that's the time when most people learn, the need for setting boundaries. But I've certainly learned through the years that boundaries protect me from a dangerous notion of thinking I can do everything for everyone, you know, or, that's one thing that hits home for me, but how, like as a therapist, how do you take on people's suffering without getting crushed by it?
Yeah. This is a big aspect of therapist training, right? Is how to have professional boundaries. And so some of it is an attitude, like the attitude with which you approach the therapeutic endeavor. So, you know, my clients' problems are theirs. They're not mine. They're not mine to fix. They're not mine to solve. They're not mine to take on. We've talked on the show a lot about transference, countertransference, and how that affects boundaries. But there's in any job that's challenging like ours, there's the risk of sort of quote unquote taking your work home with you. And it's not that we want to be totally unaffected. We are real people in the room with other real people. So, you know, there certainly have been times where the suffering of my client is difficult not to take on, especially if I relate to it in some way. But it's important to just approach it with that stance. I think as a professional helper, you know, we got into this profession because we care, we want people to feel better, we want people to do better. But we can only do so much. And, it's usually not helpful to just sort of take other people's problems on to ourselves.
Yeah. Like you can take them, you can be fully present with them in that session, but that's where the work lies, I think, is not taking it home with you, not letting it crush you, not letting it take you away from everything else in your dharma, if you will, your purpose. So that's kind of another question, another rhetorical one. Is taking on too much good or bad for your purpose in life, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the operable phrase there is too much. And that's going to be different for everybody. It might be different for you at different times in your life or in different contexts. But there are some signs and symptoms of taking on too much. When you feel overwhelmed, when you feel super, super stressed, when maybe you're normally pretty compassionate and that compassion starts to fatigue. Even we have a concept in our helping profession of this, of compassion fatigue or burnout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sleeplessness, you know, lots of things that, that are good indicators that maybe your boundaries are a bit too porous. You're taking on too much.
Like good old Stephen Covey would say in his Seven Habits, sharpen your saw, and a million other ways of looking at that. But one other kind of thought provoking or triggering question is detachment cruel or necessary?
Here I am trying to answer your rhetorical questions.
Yeah. Go for it.
Yeah. I guess it depends on the detachment, you know. I mean, you can imagine if your boundaries are too rigid and you're completely detached from maybe people that you would otherwise want to be close to, or so rigid and inflexible that you don't have access to certain experiences that you would benefit from because you're hiding behind these really, really thick, rigid walls. But I think some degree of attachment can be really healthy. It can be it can be evidence of more flexible boundaries.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess it depends on how you define or think of the word detached.
Yeah. And there are a lot of, factors at play in all this that I find interesting. Like on my way in today, knowing that we were going to talk about this topic, I just for fun, did a search to see how many TED Talks there were on boundaries. And there was one that caught my eye because it was from a psychiatrist. And he opened with telling this story that it was a yoga story. So I was paying attention a little extra.
Psychiatry and yoga.
Yeah, he was working in an inpatient unit and he was trying to make this yoga class for a self-care break that he had really tried to prioritize and carve out the time. Like we can relate, right? And then... right before that, he gets called to a code whatever on the unit and someone's like agitated, really needed help, needed his help. And so he intervened and felt good about that and was still going to make his class. So he goes into his office, gets his yoga mat, and he's walking out and they're the patient's parents, like just wanting to know, had all these questions, like what happened to our adult son? Like what is going on? What's the diagnosis? Is chronic? How long will these medications last that were given, et cetera? And so as he was standing there answering some of the questions, he could see the clock over their shoulder and could notice him his struggling to be fully present. And then so he answered the questions and he still made it to his yoga class. So, and then he says he gets there and he's standing there in tree pose. And all of a sudden he says, oh no. In his head, he has this inner dialogue going, oh no, am I a monster? Am I evil? Because I just prioritized my yoga over answering like how to be to have a kid like who's in the psych ward right now and have all these questions.
Right.
So it was, I thought a really useful example. That's why I'm relaying it because I think we all have that inner battle at times with our boundaries.
It's a good example of why having a good, clear sense of your values can be useful in informing how you set boundaries.
Yeah.
We talk about values clarification on the show a lot, but and values can ebb and flow or your priority of certain values can change. But, you know, if you're struggling to set boundaries, that might be a good place to start is some self-reflection. You know, when do I feel drained? When do I feel energized? Do I feel compelled to dig from the bottom of my barrel to serve others? And how does that affect me? How does it affect my ability to show up in the way that I really want to, that is consistent with my values? Because I have a lot of clients who might describe themselves as people pleasers, for example. And they really, at their core, want to be of service. They like helping others. They like being kind and generous. But then they find themselves resenting a lot of these relationships because they feel like they have to say yes to every request.
Mm-hmm. There's a saying or a quote that I've heard that I think is a little bit also thought-provoking or controversial, is like that you should never do anything or let your kids do anything that would make you dislike them. Mm. And wondering what you think of that idea. There's a message under there that I think is worth teasing out, but the delivery of it is interesting.
Yeah. It is maybe deliberately sort of abrasive in its language, or just to, like you said, trigger or provoke thought. Let your kids do anything that would make you dislike them. I think, you know, it's important that we understand that our kids might do things that we don't necessarily agree with, that might make us uncomfortable, but to make you dislike them, yeah, I think you want to transmute or communicate or teach some core values to your kids, and then sort of like we talked about in our parenting episode, maybe let them govern themselves and let them fail forward if they can.
Like if your kid is spending 17 hours a day on video games, mm-hmm. as an extreme example, and especially at a certain age, like your anger towards that, or your dislike of that or them doing that, who's really to blame, or who has responsibility for setting the container? And that's something that I like to remind myself whenever I get triggered or frustrated over things that might be in this boundary realm of, like, you know, if I'm trying to not work on Fridays as an example, but but I keep saying yes to things on Friday, whose fault is that?
And then what if you get annoyed at all the people that you're working with on Fridays, right? So there's a bit of, I don't know, displacement going on there.
Yeah.
I find that, like, if I haven't kept my boundary around sleep, for example, you and I were talking before we hit record about how we're both kind of tired. We didn't sleep super well last night. We also were playing pickleball last night, which was super fun, but for whatever reason, I had a hard time sleeping. And so I get to work today and I'm tired, and I'm noticing that I'm a little more, I guess, well, I should say a little less patient with things, and sort of muttering under my breath. And so I didn't hold a boundary around my bedtime. And now all of a sudden I'm like getting upset at people.
Well, did you hold a boundary around your bedtime? Because we were talking about this, and I think you said you were in bed.
True.
And
technically, yes.
This is a bit of a tangent, but I heard some damn good sleep advice recently, because we've talked about on here as well the importance of sleep and the importance of not sleep shaming yourself and others. And so there was this podcast that just caught my eye a couple of weeks ago by one of the sleep experts, and in the intro summary with a highlight clip, it summed up the guy's message. Mm. It was like, here's all you need to know really about sleep is get in bed by 11 or whatever your time is, get up by 7 or whatever your time is, and let go of everything else because you cannot control it. Mm. And so, you know, I would just make an argument back to you that, you didn't violate your boundaries necessarily. And sometimes that happens. And there are different kinds of boundaries, like the hard and soft, or the non-negotiables and the aspiring boundaries, if you will. Like I don't work on Fridays. I mean, that's not the case for me, but that would be nice.
But if
that were a hard boundary, and it's up to you to follow, you can just have that algorithm or reflex, no, no, no. But what if you have this kind of aspirational boundary of you want to be home by dinner every night, or you want to leave work by 4:30, you know, for this time especially, and then something comes up, a deadline, an important thing, or and you don't, you know, you're not 100% batting 100% on that. that's okay, right? Yeah, like this flexibility that you were talking about, I think is so important, especially on certain boundaries, especially when you're clear on how hard to hold that line. Yeah. And if you're willing to, you know, let it be porous, let it be flexible at times, and able to not judge the hell out of yourself after.
Yeah, excellent points. It reminds me, I was listening to Rich Roll talk to Cal Newport about his new book, about Cal's new book, Slow Productivity.
Oh yeah, I want to read that.
It's good.
Yeah.
I mean, I've listened to a bunch of interviews. I tend to do that when a new book comes out from an author I like. I'll listen to like 5 podcast interviews and be like, nah, I got it.
Same, like before I
get the book.
Before I do the whole book or Audible, I will try to listen to at least one author interview, not necessarily 10.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a podcast junkie, but, he was talking about how he structures his day, like his week, his calendar. And, you know, Cal doesn't have any social media. He's never been on social media, and he has really strict email boundaries. You know, he does one day a week of, where he teaches at whatever university he works at. And that's the day he does work related to that thing. And that's a pretty strong boundary. But then he was talking about his like writing day or something like that, or maybe it was his podcast day. And that's a pretty strong boundary. But if something comes up and he needs to move it, he will. His boundary is I at least will have a day in the week that is dedicated to that work. I typically like to do it on X day, but if I have to move it, I will.
Yeah. Things happen. Things come up, and sometimes beautifully abundant things that would just require some reshuffling or giving up your attachment to a certain boundary, if you will. Maybe not the right way to put it, but sometimes that might fit. Yeah,
I think it is important though to continue to recalibrate, like come back to your values, and you might discover like, okay, I've been trying to be flexible, and I'm moving into the territory of porous boundaries. I'm saying yes to too much.
Yeah.
I sometimes ebb and flow with that. Like I'll notice I'm overwhelmed and I'll just start saying no to everything. And then, I get to relax, time frees up, and then like, oh, I think I've said no to too many things. So I start saying yes to stuff, and then it'd be nice to sort of stay in the middle. But I think that's common for a lot of people, just kind of going up and down.
I personally like that way of looking at boundaries that you just mentioned, is rigid, porous, or healthy boundaries. You could call them balanced boundaries, if you will, but rigid boundaries might show up in these different kind of situations, like, someone might even avoid close relationships because their boundaries are too rigid, or they might not be able to ask for help. They might be like over protective or over inhibited about sharing any information that might connect them with someone. They might seem detached to people like too commonly, or keep people at a distance. But porous boundaries could be the opposite. Like someone just, we all know the oversharing, the can't say no, and find yourself doing everything for everyone and likely resenting, over-involved with others' problems, dependent on others' opinions, accepting, tolerating abuse and things like that.
Exploitation.
Fearing rejection if you don't comply to others' requests. Where in this balanced place, you're more grounded in your own values and opinions. And, you know, you're much less likely to compromise those for others, and, you know, sharing in an appropriate way, knowing your needs, communicating what you need, accepting no when others say it, and saying no when you want to.
Yeah. So, you know, given that description, you can imagine what might pull people off center from healthy boundaries. And you mentioned a few of those things. It could be fear. Fear of a variety of things. Fear, like in the case of rigid boundaries, fear of being hurt by being too vulnerable. Or in the case of porous boundaries, fear of not being liked or abandoned if you're not of service or if you're not self-disclosing enough. So fear, certainly one thing that can pull us off center with boundaries. And then I think a lack of our sense of self, like who we are.
Yeah.
You see this in a lot of folks who don't have healthy boundaries, is you start getting them to think about it and, ask them a question like, well, what did you really want to do in that scenario? And they'll be like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what I want. I don't know what my yes is. I really don't know what my no is.
Yeah, I like that, because if you look at some of the, say, what we call cluster B personality disorders, or look at borderline personality traits as an example of, there can be some intense fear of abandonment and frantic efforts to avoid real or even perceived irrational
rejection,
abandonment. Yeah. And so you might be calling someone 100 times when they won't pick up the phone, or showing up in their door when you know it's not what they would want or a good idea. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that is very often fueled by not having a grounded identity of yourself, because like if someone's pulling away from you and you don't have a solid identity of your own, you start to feel like you might be crumbling into emptiness, and that's scary.
Really scary. Yeah. And, or, you know, you might have a maladaptive identity. So in the case of codependence, for example,
Sort of
the classical example being, you've got two people in partnership. One of them, let's say, has a substance use disorder that's really dysfunctional. And so they need to be taken care of and accommodated to. And then the other person has this identity as a caretaker. Mm-hmm. So they're codependent in that way, that one of them needs to be taken care of, the other needs to take care of somebody else. But the synergistic effect is unhealthy for both. It's enabling, it's limiting.
Are we really helping someone when we have too porous of boundaries? Yeah. I think about like kids, you know, the screen time example, or eating sweets or whatever, or an example like, say, you know, you have a kid with some intense struggles developmentally or anxiety wise, and you're the only one on the planet who can calm them down. And like, because you can do that, that might feel special to you as a parent, but if you step back, is it really what you want for them and for you to have to help someone? Or do you want them to be able to self-soothe that?
Yeah. This is a bit of a tangent, but what you said made me think of one of the things we train our therapists to do in the psychedelic assisted therapy courses we teach is, you know, when you're sitting with somebody on psychedelics and it becomes apparent to you that they might need some kind of intervention or some help, we encourage our therapists to pause and ask themselves a couple questions. One is, you know, the acronym WAIT, why am I talking, or who is this for? Right.
Yep.
So I'm about to say something to this person. Is it for them? Is it really what they need? Or is it for you because you're uncomfortable or because you have this need to rescue? So an example of a boundary that you would want to set based on some pretty thorough self-examination.
Yeah, that's a good example. So on that, those kind of types of boundaries, just to take it one step further of how you might use that or check in personally, because I've done this with people at retreats. I've done it in some therapy training workshops and things like that. But, you know, you might think of people with whom you struggle to set healthy boundaries or balanced boundaries. And that could be too rigid, too porous, or variable. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you might start with asking yourself, why do you struggle to set boundaries with your mom, your dad, your partner, your kids. And, you know, looking at that relationship as an example is kind of useful to drill down on. Because then you could kind of make a matrix of the different types of boundaries, like physical, intellectual, emotional, time, sexual boundaries, all that, material, financial boundaries. And then you might just start to put examples that fall into porous, rigid, or unhealthy across these different domains. And then, so you've got an inventory, at least for a person, where you commonly struggle with your boundaries. And then you could imagine what it would be like to have healthy, balanced boundaries with that person. And think of some specific actions you could take towards that worthy ideal, you know, towards it, being gentle with yourself, and also think about how might they respond or what communication might be needed. But the big one is like, how would life be if you're able to shift these boundaries back into a balanced place.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. It's a good formula, a good way to start experimenting with boundaries. And usually what I'll tell people is as they experiment, they're going to collect some really valuable data. There are going to be people in their lives that don't respond well to their boundary setting for a variety of reasons. You know, maybe these people don't respond well to anybody's boundary setting.
He said no.
How dare you? Or they're just not used to you being that way, right?
He never says no, or no one says no to me or something.
Yeah, well, like that. Those two are different, right? Yeah. There's the no one says no to me, and that's more of their issue. And then there's he never says no, and that's more an issue of the dynamic that you have sort of trained this person to expect from you. So I like to tell my clients that as you're practicing setting boundaries, take inventory about how people react, because that will give you a good sense of like the kinds of people you want to keep in your inner circle.
Yeah.
You want people who are going to be responsive to your boundary setting. So you might have a person in your life who is really, really challenging to set boundaries with. Maybe it's a parent, maybe it's a partner, maybe it's a friend, maybe it's with somebody at work. And as you set boundaries from this, you know, reasonably secure place of my time is valuable, I am worth setting boundaries for, you know, I need to serve people from an overflowing cup, not a nearly empty cup.
Yeah.
Then you're in a position where you can more clearly see other people and their reactions to your boundaries for what they are.
Yeah.
Right. This is maybe a person with some narcissistic tendencies and they're not going to be happy with anybody's boundary setting. So if they react strongly to your boundary setting, that really has very little to do with you. It's not evidence that you did a wrong thing by pushing back. There's a really good book about this. Is it Mark Goldston? Wrote a book called Talking to Crazy, which he defends the use of that term by saying we all have crazy, you know, and he's not talking about, he's not using it in a pejorative way, but he gives sort of these templates for dealing with people with different types of, I think what he calls chronic irrationality. And then sometimes you'll discover that in your efforts to set boundaries, people don't respect them at all. And those are the kinds of people you have to set really, really big boundaries with, which might ultimately mean cutting them out of your life.
Yeah. And that's hard, especially, you know, depending on what kind of people they are.
Yeah, if a family member, that's really hard.
And this can be for a time too. I think what you said is important. I'm thinking of covert or unconscious contracts too, that we have with someone. If we're going to radically change our boundaries, especially with someone we've been coexisting with in work or home or whatever, without communicating it, then, you know, there might be a reaction for other reasons, but if you've, you know, done that communication and you've, tried out this new way and there's still that, disrespect for your boundaries or reaction or just incessant pushing of them, then yeah, like you said, there's, you know, you might need to think about what you need in your life at that time to really recalibrate it if they won't get on board with your needs.
Yeah. And some of you might be hearing what Reed just said and you all of a sudden feel really nervous, and that makes a lot of sense. That's a big move to make. I will say I'm thinking of several clients who have had the courage to experiment with this. They've set a really hard boundary like that for a time. And at first, like, especially with a family member, there was a lot of pushback, a lot of resistance, but eventually, you know, this won't happen in every case, but in the cases I'm thinking of, eventually those family members adjusted a bit.
Yeah.
You know, they changed the way that they approached my clients and the demands that they made. So it often does pay off.
Yeah. Yeah. And communicating the why can be really helpful too. Like, say you're talking about, like, a simple little example is, you know, you have a huge deadline and you got to write this paper or turn something in and you need a couple hours to focus. But you know, you're home with your kids, you might need to close the door, you know, just to, I even put a sticky note on our door cause we're recording in here and I have a meeting after this, just because if someone comes, nice and fashionably early and, which is great, and they come knocking on the door, how would they know that that's the boundary we wanted to set?
Yeah.
That not to enter our podcast randomly, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. I like that, Reed. I like, you know, being generous in your communication. There are people, though, who are going to see an explanation as a problem to solve.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, you could do this or we could adjust this. And for folks like that, I like to say no is a complete sentence.
Mm-hmm.
You can just say no. I'm not coming. I even have I go to this men's group, and there was a guy in one of this men's groups who was talking about how he really had to set a value around integrity and brutal honesty. So, you know, one of the ways he sets boundaries is like if somebody, you know, asks him to go help them move and he just doesn't want to do it, he'll say, "No, I don't want to." He won't be like, "Oh, I'm not available," or "I don't have time." He'll just be like super honest. And he said at first, of course, that was rubbing people the wrong way, but they learned to just expect that from him. And for most of the people that are close to him, it's now refreshing. They appreciate the honesty.
Yeah. It's interesting to talk about this. I'm just finding all sorts of examples in my mind of active boundary work that's going on in my life right now. And so I just want to say that, and I'm happy to share some examples, but that this is a constant process of, you know, checking in on your boundaries and working on establishing them in a good way in your life. And that work is never really complete. And some of it takes a long time. Like my own boundaries, inner turmoil about helping people, responding to requests for help, responding to calls, texts, emails, etc. I think I was sharing with you a bit of this last night of someone reached out wanting help, but I didn't reply. And this happened many times in the last week, even. Like, I didn't reply because I was on an airplane or something. And even though I might have had a thought of like, I should get back to them ASAP. Like, I know for me, sometimes things slip through the cracks, and I've had to let go of my self-criticism of that. And then when they reach back out, like this person did yesterday, I was like, oh yeah. And this isn't the perfect way to set it up. It's something I'm definitely working on. But right. But when I got on the phone with someone, I was happy to do it. It felt really good to connect with that person and offer some assistance, some like simple guidance to a question that they had and that I felt like I could provide some insight on. And yeah. So I was really glad I did. And glad that I didn't have too much turmoil from the time they first reached out to when I actually could, because I've come to terms with the fact that in my boundary practice that's been going on for many, many years now is at the end of the day, I just want to be able to say I did my best today, and that's all I can do, and some of it will have to wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's what I mean when I sort of use that popular metaphor of serving from a full or empty cup. Is if you're the kind of person who wants to be generous, who wants to be of service, you might set a personal value or boundary around the attitude in which you can offer that service. So if you know that when you're scraping the bottom of your cup to serve others, it causes some frustration, some burnout, some resentment in you, then you're not operating at sort of that aspirational self of generosity that would be more consistent with who you really are at your core. So wouldn't you rather be able to serve judiciously and generously from the excess in a way that makes you feel really good, the way you just described? In order to do that, you might have to set some boundaries that initially make you feel a little uncomfortable, like maybe a little guilty if you think too hard about it.
Like, here's my Calendly link or whatever to have a chat when there's some availability in a week or something like that. Silly example. But there are systems that you can set up and very likely need to help with those boundaries. I'm thinking of like over and over through my career, almost in every different clinical role I've done, I have to figure out the new boundary system for keeping appointments on track or not getting overscheduled, because, you know, I'll admit I've had some frustrating days where, and sometimes I didn't even know where to put the frustration when I'm like double booked and feel like I can't show up as my best self for two things at once. Right. So it makes sense. But, you know, like who is responsible? In the end, it's me for my time, and at least going forward, like setting it up in a way that supports your boundaries.
I like how transparent you're being here, Reed. I think a lot of people can relate to the struggle and sort of the ebb and flow. I remember when I got out of the military and was trying to make a living in a small group practice, I had to see a lot of clients every day in order to pay my bills. Mm-hmm. And I started to get burned out and eventually decided never again will I allow myself to do this professionally. I will change careers first before mm-hmm. I see 10 clients a day for 4 or 5 days in a row.
Yeah.
It was a disservice to me and my family. It was a disservice to my clients. So, but that was a boundary I had to discover, right? I mean, I just wanted yeah. to say yes to every client that wanted my help. And that's been a new adjustment too, as I have my small private practice and being very, very selective about who I let in and only the people that I'm very, very confident that I can serve powerfully and have the bandwidth for.
Yeah, I like that, serve powerfully, because you may have thought you were omnipotent before, but you're really not omnipotent unless you have good boundaries. And still, I know like being omnipotent is not
omnipotent
a real thing.
Within my boundaries, yeah.
Yeah, but to powerfully serve requires good boundaries, right? Yeah.
What you were saying about sort of the calendar link reminded me of another thing Cal Newport said, that he has office hours. Maybe this comes from his yeah. sort of academic world, but so, you know, he is available from this time to this time on this day. That's when he will be looking at his Slack messages or his email or whatever. And then he'll do his best, to use your word, during that time. And then any requests that come to him outside of that time, he doesn't even look at. And he's yeah. decided that's enough, right? He can't help everybody. He can't respond to every request. And it just has to be enough.
People respect that more than you think, too. Mm-hmm. And one other really helpful thing I've tried to integrate over the years in working on what to do with an unruly inbox and a schedule that can get kind of hectic at times is just reminding myself of that and that you can even help model good boundaries for the people you work with, your team, your clients, your kids. Like, what do you want to teach your kids, right? Having porous boundaries or having good, healthy, balanced boundaries, or being too overly detached, rigid, mm-hmm. insensitive,
yeah.
right? And we are constantly communicating these unspoken boundaries by, like, especially if we show up in our outside of the office hours and respond to everything often, when we really said we had a boundary, it's almost like, you know, you've just killed your own boundary.
Right. Right. Another thing I'll say about learning to set healthy boundaries is, it requires a certain facility with communication that not all of us are going to have, especially if we're really used to just saying yes. Right? If our only way to talk about boundaries is sure, then we might not necessarily have the words initially. So again, be patient and compassionate with yourself, but there's a lot of good instruction out there. A lot of good books written about boundaries. Mm-hmm. There's even a book called Boundaries.
Yeah, there are a lot of them.
Yeah. So like use the resources and get support. If you're if you know this is an issue for you and you're struggling to set boundaries, talk to somebody who you admire that sets really clear boundaries.
Yeah.
If you have anyone in your life that respects your boundaries, talk to them about this. Get a therapist or a coach. Take a course. Like, it is a skill in some ways that can be developed with yeah. good training and information.
Yeah, I agree. And it takes time, like patience with yourself along the way. Cause like today I was sharing before I got here, ooh, it's become a hectic day. And I even was aware of that risk of even trying to fit in a recording where yeah. I want to be absolutely present with you. But, yeah, I also did that knowing that I'd probably have to scramble a little bit. So just reminding myself that of, yeah, this is today and a hectic day is okay. And I'm not going for 100%, you know, perfect, peaceful, blissful boundaries, right? Because they're not etched in stone. They change over time and you need a little bit of flexibility because of how uncertain life can be too.
Yeah. I think allowing yourself good enough boundaries in those scenarios, like if you are in danger of some perfectionistic self-flagellation, then good enough boundaries. Did my best, maybe wasn't perfect. Use that data to recalibrate.
But in the end, like I think a good reminder that you mentioned is boundaries are all about who we give power to, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want to give our power away. And I would love in an ideal world for that power of how I spend my time, my energy, my resources to be in my hands. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we're in certain roles that make that more difficult. Like we've talked a lot about lately, this role of a parent or a role of a leader in a business or in a community, right? Where we have assumed a role that requires us to be on point and of service and accessible more than we would be otherwise. And then there are, of course, different cultural influences. Some cultures that are more individualistic maybe sort of set the stage such that it's easier to create personal boundaries versus a culture that's more collectivistic, for example.
Yeah. And, you know, a couple things come to mind on all that is, well, I think, like we've been saying, setting good boundaries sets a stage for good relationships. And I'm not just talking about personal ones, but like with your boss, for example, at work. It may seem especially scary to set a boundary there, but like if you really think about their perspective, if they've hired you and want you to not burn out and self-destruct, you know, if you have good, reasonable, healthy boundaries and communicate those well, then, you know, they've got to respect that in the end, or else, like you mentioned, it might be a sign of something else on their end that might need to be addressed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It reminds me of this. One of my friends has a shirt that says, "Be yourself, they'll adjust." Mm-hmm. And it's an oversimplification, of course, but I think it's just a fun, pithy way of communicating what you describe. Like, you know, be yourself. If you know you've only got so much energy and time, communicate that to your boss in your example. And if they respond well, you know, you've got the potential for a good employer-employee relationship. And if they don't, like you said, it might be more about them, or it might be more about the work culture that you're in. It might be a sign to make a change.
Yeah. And for some people, myself included, when you start shoring up your boundaries better, there is a risk of feeling guilty for it. Yeah. And you know, with personal experience, that doesn't just immediately vanish with the simple reminder of, oh, this is self-care. It still happens sometimes, or I still have to work on that or remind myself to let go of that if it shows up. But I can also tell you that over time, that's become what might have lingered for hours or minutes can sometimes now be cleared in seconds in that way. Like, you know, the mind and the body will bring stuff up, you know, even if you've done a lot of work on it. But I think the work also helps you move through.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, speaking of boundaries, we're coming up on a time boundary.
Oh, yeah.
For your meeting. Anything else? Any final words about boundaries?
No, I think just to recap a couple things, check in on what you want, what you value, what you need, communicate your needs and your boundaries, you know, keep working on enforcing them, right? And keep in mind the reasons why you're doing it. And if your boundaries need to shift over time, try to be consistent. Like I think about your client example, how would it be if you were seeing 10 clients a day for an hour, a therapeutic hour? How would it be? And you're good with, you've even shown your inner therapist biological clock in here of like, you know, your mind will almost send a bell when we get to 50 minutes or something.
Yeah, it's been trained into my nervous system.
Yeah, but how would it be with your clients if some sessions were an hour and 20 minutes, some were 30 minutes, and it's totally random? Like, how would it feel the person who gets a 30-minute session one day,
right?
You know? And how would it make your day feel? Right.
It's actually a good example of a professional boundary that I set very early on in my career that benefited me and my clients. Is I usually have pretty tight session time boundaries.
Out of necessity.
I mean, not only for my own sanity, but so that the clients know what to expect. Like they know they get this much time with me. I've even known of therapists who have they set a timer, and this is a little bit too overt for me, but you know, the client might be mid sentence. And if that timer goes off, it's like, okay, we're done for today. It's not how I run things, but just an example of a professional boundary that both served me and my clients.
Yeah. And be aware and sensitive and respectful of the boundaries of others, of course. 'Cause this is a two-way street. But yeah, like we've been saying, that's where you find your power and sovereignty and freedom. Like this counterintuitive notion that I really believe is like, if you can set up the structure or the boundaries or borders, if you will, in your life, then you can really flourish and fly from that place.
Yeah. I'm glad you made that point. And it's okay if it takes time, right?
Yeah.
It's okay if you take small steps.
Yeah. Set a boundary of not beating yourself up about it.
There you go. I love it. Well, thanks, Reed.
Thank you.
Until next time. Psychedelic Therapy Frontiers is brought to you by Numinous, a mental wellness company committed to tackling the global mental health crisis by delivering best-in-class psychedelic-assisted therapies, contributing to the body of primary and clinical psychedelic research, and fostering healing through community connection and social responsibility. You can learn more about Numinous at numinous.com. That's N-U-M-I-N-U-S.com. If you enjoyed the show today and you want to support us, here's how you do it. Rate and review the show on platforms like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Subscribe to the Numinous YouTube channel, like the videos, and share it. Share the show or clips of the show with someone that you think will enjoy it. Hey listeners, it's Steve Thayer here, letting you know that Numinous offers unique training opportunities for mental health practitioners to develop their skills and expertise in offering psychedelic-assisted therapy to clients. These courses are carefully crafted by Numinous professionals like myself, Reed, Joe, and others, and offer a variety of high-quality learning experiences. So, if you would like to learn more about these trainings, you can find the link in the show notes below, or you can visit numinous.com/training. That's numinous.com/training. The content of this podcast does not constitute medical advice or mental health treatment. Consult with a medical or mental health professional if you believe you are in need of mental health treatment.